a new report out on whether farms should give up land along streams to restore salmon. This is a topic we've talked about plenty of times here on the program. And, you know, this is the idea of buffers. It's been batted around for years. And in recent years, it got pretty gnarly with some plans by the governor's office to just make it happen. And a lot of folks saying, well, what about all this land that would be taken up by these buffers? Great, we want to restore salmon, but what happens to those farms that are lost? In recent proposals within the last couple of years here in Whatcom County, we estimated in some scenarios losing up to 30% or something like 30,000 acres of productive farmland here in Whatcom County if something like this, something like the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife, anyway, prefers. And apparently the governor's office prefers to be done to restore fish. Now, is that a balance between fish and farming? The farming community says no. And what's the compensation for all of this land that's being taken away? Since then, there have been some collaborative efforts. And we've talked about that on the program as well. Some people saying, hold on now, we can't just do this top down. We've got to get more people involved. And that's where this report comes out of. Joining me right now from the 10th district down on Whidbey Island, State Senator Ron Mizall. He's been, of course, following this very closely. Senator Mizall, talk about this new report. It's got a lot of stuff in it.
So Plosh and Carr was chosen to help with this process. And they started off by interviewing a bunch of people, and I was pretty blunt with them about the Lorraine Loomis Act and how I thought it set the process back years.
The Lorraine Loomis Act was that rather draconian proposal that would have just kind of forced a lot of this taking of land to be put into stream buffers, right?
Yes, and it wasn't just the taking of the property. I mean, that was bad enough. It was the fact that it made bond servants out of those who owned the land, because then they had to plant the buffers. They had to maintain the buffers. It wasn't, it was truly draconian and an unmitigated disaster to those people who owned property that they deemed to be important to salmon. So it died as it should have. It was a poorly thought out process. So then the outcome of all of that was this process. And Plosh and Carr interviewed me. I gave them my opinion because they asked for it.
That's the law firm that was tasked with leading this process and coming up with these new recommendations.
And I found them to be respectful and observant and actually wanting these opinions. And then the outcome of that was to put together this task force. And the task force has come up with four recommendations because of the diversity of opinion on this task force. There are four different recommendations. And they're pretty extensive. I think we have to come back to the first question before we even delve into that, and that is, all of the work that we have done to restore habitat, has it resulted in a positive return in salmon to our rivers? And that answer would be no. Secondly, are the rivers that are behind dams or farmed around, do those differ in returning salmon numbers than those free-flowing streams? The answer is no, but not they're not statistically different. The Fraser, which has no dams on it, those runs have been impacted as well. Are coastal streams that have no dams, no agriculture, those have been impacted as well. So the initial thought process is that this is just destroyed habitat that is resulting in these low runs. That doesn't necessarily hold up.
There's more to the story, as we've reported here on the program, to salmon recovery than just habitat. While habitat may be a piece of it, It is not the, and it sounds like it's not necessarily even the primary factor right now limiting salmon recovery.
I don't think that that is just conjecture. I think that the statistics hold that up. We know through radio tagging and others that though we may have a good return back to the saltwater, those salmon are not coming back. We are losing them out in the open ocean. We can always improve our environment. We can always do things to make things better. But the Lorraine Loomis Act was draconian. Some of these recommendations are really like recommendation number three. It essentially just the Lorraine Loomis Act all over again, using eminent domain to acquire critical lands necessary to achieve three-year outcomes. We are talking about three-year outcomes now, but we haven't seen 20-year outcomes that match what we were looking for. How are we going to come up with three-year outcomes?
Right. So this new set of recommendations comes out. By the way, this is The Farming Show. I'm Dylan Honkoop here on KGMI with State Senator Ron Mizall of the 10th District, who is on and is the ranking member on the Senate's Agriculture Committee. You know, it would be more than agriculture impacted by this, but it looks to me from these recommendations that in most scenarios, agriculture would be by far the most impacted.
Well, it's the easiest to pick on. There's far less of us. It's, you know, they own larger chunks of property. I mean, if they were to go along a river that is residentially zoned and tell each one of those people, oh, by the way, you're going to lose your backyard, there's going to be far more pushback than to go to some farmer and say, oh, by the way, you know, you're going to have to put a buffer in 50 feet away from that stream. And there are recommendations here, and I think that it is it's the fourth one. It calls for maintaining and increasing the level of funding for the Voluntary Riparian Restoration Program, which we refer to as VSP, through RCO and the Conservation Commission. Both of those aid in the voluntary program, and in Skagit County, actually, the county takes care of the VSP program, Voluntary Stewardship Program, and we are building buffers. We are planting native vegetation. We are doing what needs to be done on the streams that we know have issues with warming. We only have a couple. The main stem of the Skagit is cold. It's the couple of side streams that have issues, and that's what we're working on with the VSP program.
Well, that's the, I guess to back up a little bit, that's the bottom line with this idea of buffers, is to get trees along the stream to do a few different things, but primarily shade the stream and cool the water, because warm water can be problematic and ultimately, if it's warm enough, deadly to the fish that we're trying to recover, right?
Both ways. Returning salmon cannot handle too warm a water, and smolts after hatching, returning to saltwater, cannot handle too warm a water. And we do have some streams that have issues with that. And I'm all for utilizing VSP with landowners voluntarily for them to help with this issue. But the truth of the matter is, even the idea of using eminent domain only supposed to be used for the public good. Now, you can strategize that the salmon issue is public good, but it's going to run into problems in court. I don't think there's a doubt about it. So because eminent domain really should only be used by local governments and not the state government, you know, it's a whole other thing if we're talking Department of Defense, but we're talking about state government.
Right.
Eminent domain is a really sticky wicket when you get into the judicial oversight of it.
Well, on one hand, you're talking about the voluntary efforts, and that's the first recommendation in this extensive, you know, detailed list of recommendations. The official term, I guess I should be saying, is the Riparian Task Force Preliminary Recommendations. And there's been a ton of voluntary work done already. If you look at the CREP program and, like you said, VSP, hundreds of miles of streamside have been restored, buffers have been put in. And the key there, at least from what we've talked about here at Save Family Farming and Whatcom Family Farmers, is that it has been voluntary and flexible so that the work can be done in places where it makes sense and reaches compromises with the land use around it, rather than being a big, as we've called them, big dumb buffers, which are one size fits all, ignoring the context, just a blanket rule that every piece of stream of any, you know, just about any size needs a very large site potential tree height, which could be 200 plus feet in some cases, buffer along it. You know, you talk about voluntary stuff. Okay, we've done good work there, but doesn't that all change if it becomes mandatory? What happens to the voluntary stuff? It's my understanding that the resources that have supported that would go away.
Yes, I think that there are some contradictory things about this and the voluntary stewardship program. I think that, you know, some of their calculations are really unrealistic. You know, I spent a lifetime in agriculture, but also in the woods, and a 200-foot tree is huge.
Yeah.
We're talking about some unrealistic goals and some unrealistic expectations. We've spent the last 20 years working on this salmon issue, and we've made progress when it comes to the environment, the quality of the water and streams, lack of silt, the agricultural impact on it, on and on. We've done a tremendous amount. And the result of that is, you know, our huge salmon run. Oh, that's right. All the work we've done has not returned the salmon to the streams. We've spent billions of dollars. We're talking about spending billions and billions more. I mean, when you talk about tearing out the Snake River dams, what have we seen accomplished? This is really more about groupthink than it is about anything else. Yes, there is some science, but oftentimes the science follows the money. And if you are a professor doing a study to show that you have poor runs, and it is to show that it's pollution, per se, we know that often, more often than not, it's the urban pollution that's having the impact. But that's a lot more difficult to control.
Right.
So we concentrate once on timber and agriculture and those. And yes, we occupy a huge amount of the land, but the water running off of our lands aren't what is containing the pollutants that we know are affecting for instance, coho, salmon. Let's take a step back, look at what is our problem. We know what the main problem is, but what are the solutions to that? And are the solutions that we are pursuing really going to have the impact? Because it hasn't been shown to be so.
It's kind of like planning to do the same thing and expecting a different result.
Oh, I think there's a definition that goes along with that.
Yeah.
It is. And unfortunately, you know, we've had a government that has supported this. You mentioned Department of Fish and Wildlife. I've talked with members of Department of Fish and Wildlife who are not along with this groupthink. They believe that the least impact is coming from timber and ag lands. And the reality is that quality of the water in our streams has increased dramatically. Maybe not the salt water, especially when you get down into Puget Sound. There are some issues there with secondary sewage treatment and overflow and the like. But our streams are better than they were 20 years ago, and yet we aren't seeing a return of salmon. We've got a lot more predators out there. We've got an orca population that is increasing at 6% a year. All we hear about is a southern resident pod, but we aren't hearing about the bigs, which are in southeast Alaska, which are increasing at 6% a year. We've got a pinniped population that's huge, and we've got a bycatch issue, which we do not have a handle on. So is it just the streams? I don't believe so, although the state of Washington has not lived up to the court order when it comes to fish passage. We need to replace a lot more culverts, but the reality is that nature is very adaptable. And so are we studying and looking at the correct issues for the problem? And this task force, I'm not taking anything away from them, but it was formed with one thing in mind, and that was riparian buffers.
Well, what is this all going to mean at the end of the day for farming? This is The Farming Show, by the way. I'm Dylan Honkoop, talking with another a farmer and state senator, Ron Mazzal, representing the 10th district down on Whidbey Island is where he farms. There are four recommendations in this. What's the process here? It's not like these are about to become law. And are they talking about doing all of these or picking one of them or picking a couple of them? Or what happens next?
Well, so the final report, I believe, comes out June 1st. This is the preliminary. Somebody's going to have to pick and choose. There will be a process to determine which is going to have the highest and best outcome. The long term, what I fear is that we're just going to see further pressure on agriculture. This has been, it's strange. There's a direct correlation with what we do in the legislature and the cost of food in a grocery store. And we are now the fourth highest state when it comes to food costs in the United States. Seattle has the highest food cost of cities its size. Do we see a correlation here? I can tell you that there is. We continue to drive up the cost of food, which we've always enjoyed, pretty low cost of food, but now it continues. I heard this morning 30% increase in the last year. You see it at the grocery store, but we're also seeing shortages. We passed a law in 19. I say we, I wasn't there at the time, but the legislature did, to require cage-free eggs. Oh, a warm, fuzzy, wonderful thing to do. But that eliminated producers. And then now we've got the avian influenza. Egg prices not only have gone up, but they're unavailable in some stores. We're going to see that across the board, whether it's the dairy business, the beef business, potatoes and raspberries. And then we increase the cost of labor, and then we increase the cost of everything that we do in agriculture. It's going to have an impact on the food price, and that's what affects consumers.
Yeah, and if you see what we're doing, you know, environmentally to protect salmon, increasing these costs, yet it's not having the results. The question is, why are we doing it? Argue the same about. Go ahead.
The adjudication in the NUCS Act. I mean, you tell me that's not salmon related. You know, the truth of the matter is, we continue to push farmers to the brink of having to make really hard decisions. And what is the result? Do we have more salmon? No. Do we have all the other things that they claim to want? Not necessarily, but you certainly have higher food costs.
Yeah, and that's the shame of it. It'd be one thing if, okay, you know, this is a trade-off to make good things happen, but the good things aren't happening, and the costs keep coming. And that's the bottom line, as well as just, you know, the potential loss of huge amounts of farmland and thus farming, in particularly in Western Washington, as a result of this continuing idea of big inflexible buffers that, you know, stays alive in at least one or two of the recommendations in this report, is, you know, continues to send chills down the spine of farmers wondering what their future is at a time when the public is saying, no, we don't want family farming to go away. So people need to know about this. They need to follow this and speak out. We'll continue to track what's happening with this issue. State Senator Ron Mazzal with us here on the program this morning. I know you're going to continue to work on this. Stay in touch with us, and we appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Dylan, for the opportunity.